ಸ್ಮರಂತಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಂಜನಾಶ್ರವಾಸಯ ಸಂಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೇ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಭೂಪ್ರತಿದಾಮಾಯಂ ಸದಾಪಿ ಸಾಧಿಗಂ. ಅದಾನಷ್ಟನಂತಂತೆ ಇದಂ ಯಾಚೇ ಪುನಃ ಪುನಃ ಇಮಾನುಪಾಪದಂ ಬೋಜ ದುರಿಶಂ ಜನ್ಮ ಜನ್ಮನಿ ಪೈರಾಗ್ಯ ಯುಪ್ತಿ ವಿಷಂ ಯತ್ನಾಯ ಅಪಾಯ ಮಾ ಮನದಿಕ್ಷಮಂತಂ ಪಂಪುರಿಯ ಪರತೂ ಪ್ರಭು ಕೀ ಶನಾತನ ಸ್ತಂ ಅಪಮಾಶ್ರಯಾಮಿ. ಪಂಚಾಪಾಥೃಪ್ಯಶ್ಚಿಂದೂಪೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ವಿವಾಸತಿ ಗೋರ್ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಸೊ ಗ್ರೀಟಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ On the road from Richmond, Virginia to New Jersey. I think I'm, I don't know, maybe approaching Washington, D.C. now. The last couple of days I've been on a Sangha tour visiting the regular members of the Sangha. So on a Wednesday I gave class at Shastra Prabhu's house, and this weekend I was at the home of Sangha Jewal in Richmond, Virginia, and Suvitri, and Gail Barangi was also there visiting with her daughter. We had a nice weekend. But I looked at the verses that I was going to speak on before I left. So even though I don't have the text before me, I still will be able to speak. And I have both hands on the wheel. I have an ear plug in, so I'm going to be quite safe in the driving and also control my ecstasies. My hands will be on the wheel, not waving in the air. I also left a little bit earlier. Of course, for me, 6 hours is quite a brutal drive. But so far, it's been quite pleasant. I chanted out loud for the first half hour and then listened to a class. Then went out and got gas and took a little walk, and I'm back in the park. Also left a little early because I got word from my older brother that his wife, my sister-in-law, Kathy, is in her last, I guess, days. I mean, she could go any minute. And he requested me to be there. She said, if many of you saw her 2 or 3 years ago, she came to my Vyasa Puja. And of my relatives, she was certainly one of the most favorable. My relatives are generally very favorable. She was the very, very favorable. and the experience of, so my whole family is actually there at this David, you know, writing. And you see how much, there's a book by Ernest Becker, The Denial of Death, how much we want to be eternal. Really, we want to be what we are. I always describe it when I'm preaching in the yoga world that death is the illusion of non-existence. But while you're in that illusion, we're in that illusion. We really want the eternal, something transcendent. So I see, my brother writes, he says, my brother's a wonderful writer. So he sends out regular things about what went on. For the last 4.5 years, he's been sending them out. He's really a talented writer. So I can see his last description of all the family around, and it gives you a little insight too, you know, because we always describe in the Vaishnav scriptures that Dipralamba, you know, the intense suffering of separation is the highest ecstasy, and you reconcile those points because separation is a form of love, an intense love, and love is pleasure. So within that suffering, there's somehow that pleasure. So I see that in my brother's descriptions. You know, the family is joining around in a particular type of love, a worship and glorification of her. So many people in the room. And somehow when I called up, I didn't experience the sadness that I would expect. Although they're so attached, because it's such a rich sense of love. And somehow or other, that type of love, even though it's for the temporary, it's yearning for the eternal. And it almost points one to seek something transcendent. I also saw how natural it is, to worship. Because I guess she's probably by now in a catatonic state. But, you know, my brother was describing how, you know, he decorated her with a turban because she never liked to, you know, cancer, you lose the hair, you know, and somehow or other. And you can see how people need rituals, something to unite them on their worship. So somehow or other, I don't know why, but my brother and his family and his wife adopted the symbol of the elephant. The symbol of the elephant as their symbol of unity. My brother calls it a Hindu god. I don't know. But so they put a little elephant in her hand and a turban around, you know. It's so natural, the spirit to worship, to glorify. But the secret of life is to worship that which is eternal and real and most dear, which is God, and which is the soul, the real person, in connection to God. So, and I also see the benefit of transcendental knowledge, which somehow people that lack, they're not chanting kirtan, and they're in the room gossiping, because she liked gossip, and somehow trying to get her to participate. the sentiment is good. Okay. The sentiment is good. The sentiment is good, but the a little negotiation here in the just past the Lincoln Memorial. And
5.4 miles.
Okay. You'll hear my GPS. Anyway, I'm hoping I can go there and be there in time. And chant some kirtan. And have that sound vibration purify the atmosphere. Okay. Sometimes you'll see a pause in me. And that's when that's when there's a little negotiation. Anyway, in the highway, and I have to just concentrate a little bit, but now we're up the part of the part in the
6.5.
Okay, 1 second here. Okay, there's a few little turns here, so just want to assure the audience that I'm being very careful. Okay. So we're in the Anchalila. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is returning to Puri to fulfill the internal reason for his descent, which is to become an experience. Come as a devotee and experience the highest ecstasy of what it's like to have love of God to the highest limit. So, I you know, somehow I was hoping I would just be on the main highway. But somehow or other, it didn't exactly work out that way. So somehow I'm in Washington, so there's turns here and there. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes back to Puri, and then we're following. Okay, I know we are now. But we're following how the devotees are coming there, and how specifically Rupa Goswami is coming there. And Lord Chaitanya meets him and is very, very astounded by the poetry he writes. Very, very astounded by the poetry he writes, which is representative of his deep, deep level of devotion. Because you can't produce a transcendent work of art unless you're experiencing transcendence. And you can't experience transcendence unless you're in touch with transcendence. And you can't be in touch with transcendence unless you are in touch with someone who has transcendence. And you can only be in touch with someone who has transcendence if they open their heart to you. And they'll only open their heart to you if you have love for them and love for God, which is expressed by unalloyed service. So Rupa Goswami, his mood of humility, his mood of devotion, his mood of service is unparalleled. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him his heart. We're going to be clear soon, but when there's this kind of negotiation here, I'm being very, very careful. As what Bhori Jampabhu has said, and I think it's a beautiful statement, if you act in a way in which the heart of a pure devotee melts, then everything will come out. What is that? It's love. It's humility. It's love and humility based on and that we expressed in deep service. It's someone who wants to please you so much that you're confident to give them your heart. And what Rupa Goswami has, which is his deep, deep understanding of the highest revelation of Godhead, the highest manifestation of Godhead, which is Krishna in Vrindavan. So the fact that he can express that revelation in such a profound way indicates a lot about who Rupa Goswami is. Just like in Vaishnav literature, Vaishnav Shastra, always begins with prayers. Because unless you move yourself in the position of humility, you can never experience love. And if you never experience true love, you cannot write anything of value. So Lord Chaitanya is so excited about what he's heard, that he invites we're going to get to a place that's a little bit more conducive to this class. So, I think I'm kind of on the highway now. So Lord Chaitanya is just so appreciative of the character realization and the expression of that realization, which takes deep realization he's just so appreciative and stunned. Because the nature of poetry is to encapsulate sentiment. Supa Goswami had captured the sentiment of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart, which is that depth of understanding of the beauty of God when God is fully manifest in an intimate, loving relationship in the mood of Vrindavan. The full beauty of God, which is the loving heart of God. Krishna means the loving heart of God. What we are ultimately is a loving heart. Or at least that's what we are at our best. So God at his best is a loving heart. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to experience. The love of that manifestation of God, which draws out the sweetest, most intimate love.
0.59.
So Lord Chaitanya saw his heart in the poetry of Srila Rupa Goswami. He saw his heart in the poetry of Rupa Goswami. And he wanted to share that with his most intimate associates. So he brings Sapa Bhoma Bhattacharya, he brings Sarup Damodar, he brings Ramananda Roy, his most intimate associates. Okay, I'm on the main highway, almost. Yeah. See, his main associates. And then he brings them, and they all sit down together. And Rupa Goswami and Haridas Thakur they sit down at a lower place. Even though the Vaishnavas are asking them to sit with them, they have such profound humility that neither will they sit at the same level as these exalted Vaishnavas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only won't they sit, but even when asked, he won't recite the poetry. He's too shy. Now, recently at the Bhakti Center, I gave a class, part one. Part two will be coming up a week from Tuesday on the practical application, the principle of the power of humility. And I was explaining in that class, and actually speaking, when I teach a subject, I don't really get it fully until I speak it once. Somehow or other, I think my mind is connected to my body. It lets my hands move, my mouth moves, my brain doesn't work. I think that's my nature. But when they do move, it works really quickly. So I really wanted to reconcile it. Really understand deeply this concept of humility to reconcile it with self-confidence because they seem so opposite. songs of the Vaishnava, not the lowest, and that kind of feeling, to reconcile it with self-confidence, to reconcile it with the fact that although the symptoms of it seem very similar, very, very similar, it's not anything to do with a lack of self-esteem. And to reconcile it with the fact that although its symptoms are sometimes similar to a relationship someone has in codependence, it has nothing to do with that either. And I explained that the real reconciliation of all those concepts in their proper perspective came upon reading a commentary on the Brihadbhagavatamrita, where the concept of dainya is expressed. Now, this dainya, this utter humility, is exactly correlated with prema bhakti. So, the description is very interesting. How this humility comes about. When one surrenders to the divine, and therefore begins to experience the divine, one one loses his sense of being independent. And begins to realize one's independent lack of authority, independent lack of control, and begins to see that one is dependent and part of something much greater than oneself that is the controller. And then one begins to see the comparison between our infinitesimal vibhuti of power, control, authority, and the infinite vibhuti, power, control, and authority of God. And that type of realization makes one focus on one's absolutely dependent position. And one begins to lose the false conception of ego or ahankara. I am the doer. I am the controller. And when that begins to manifest, one is able to experience more and more the mercy and love of the divine. And one becomes overwhelmed with ecstasy. In that humble position. And that experience makes an indelible impression on the soul. So that whenever that
that sense of control comes out in one's dealings and relationships, where one tries to establish one's desire selfishly, independent of the will and desire of God. And when that begins to rise, one recognizes it for what it is. And one becomes cognizant again of one's dependent position. Now, these feelings are the feelings of prema bhakti. When you have love, when you have real love, your desire to control and enjoy recedes. So unless your desire to control it recedes, you don't experience prema. And unless you experience prema, you don't experience true humility. So it stays in one's heart. It's actually something very, very real. It's not a psychological adjustment. It's an awareness of the soul. Sangha member, Mahamuni, is co-editing a book on the concept of agency in Gaudiya, I think in Vaishnavism. Agency, the initiate of an action. And when you actually get into the philosophy, you begin to understand that to do anything, how much we are dependent on God. How much our ability to do anything is dependent on the instruments that God gives us to do it, which He can give or take away. So even if one has good instruments and is able to do things and is able to recognize that, he still doesn't get that ego. It doesn't interfere. He doesn't allow it. A humble person doesn't allow it to interfere with his sense of love and humility, because he doesn't claim those things constitutionally. He knows they can be given and they can be taken away. As Ram Roy likes to quote from The Honeymooners, Ed Norton, who worked in the sewer, you better be nice to the people on your way up, because they're the same thing. People you're going to meet on the way tackle. So this feeling, and it actually, in one's feelings, there sometimes can be a deep regret of the expression of ego, or even the scent of the expression of ego, which throws one back forcefully on the glory of the soul as dependent. And even extreme expressions of humility will arise. in the highest state, extreme expressions of humility. Trinadapi Sudhichena. I am lower than the blade in grass. Lower than the blade in grass. One will look and see grass and see so many utilitarian uses of grass. We'll see the quality of grass. One steps on it, it just comes back. You'll see the tree and the tolerance of the tree and how the tree is for everything else. And as that ego diminishes, one will be able to offer respects to others. There's a story of it's a true story. A very learned, very powerful merchant who in his retired life wanted to come to Vrindavan and be a mendicant. And he wanted initiation of a great Babaji. And the Babaji didn't want to initiate such an egotistical disciple. But this person, as sometimes business people can, was so insistent. So he said, Swami Guru said, okay, I will initiate you if you can find someone or something in Vrindavan that in all respects is lower than you. So to do this, he had to analyze people and find their best qualities. To see if they're even in that respect they were lower. So he really couldn't find anybody, and it really changed his consciousness. And then he went out to the fields and he passed stool and he saw the stool. He said, yes, this is lower than me. Then he said, well, no, it's not. Because this started as prasadam. And it was me that turned it into this. So I am lower than this. Then he saw some worm in the stool. And then he said, oh, maybe that is lower than me. But then he said, no. Because I turned good things into stool. And the worm turned stool into earth. He finally came back to his guru and said, I cannot find anyone. I cannot find anyone that is lower than me. Person said, okay, you'll be initiated. So it's a genuine feeling. And within that feeling, it's a lamentation, but the lamentation is not that I am not great. The lamentation is that I am so foolish that I want to be great. When someone has low self-esteem, their lamentation is, I am not great. And that causes a psychological aberration. But real humility, one is filled with love. One is satisfied in that position. They're happy in love. They're happy in humility. We talked about this concept, Baba. Baba is a mood you have. It's different than a thought that you have. A thought may come and go. Baba is the condition of the mind. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tajantyam te kalevaram tom tame vaiti kongte asadata bhava. Whatever state you attain, at whatever state you'll have at the moment of death, to that state you'll go. The face is the index of the mind. But it's not just thinking. It's your bhava. Just like in we had our Sherborne gathering, the camaraderie of friends who are in the academy and interested in those things. We had a presentation on the first verse of the Yoga Sutra by Pradyumna, and he gave the various states of the mind. You can be completely distracted, you can be focused and half distracted, you can be fully concentrated, and you can be in samadhi, just the highest absorption. But the point that was made by Vyasa, the commentaries, it's not a particular point of time they're describing. It's describing your general mood. Are you a half-in, half-out person? Are you a total-out person? Or you're a fixed person? It's not you're one sometimes and one the other. No. So Rupa Goswami was so deeply absorbed, so much experiencing the control, the authority, and the love of God in his life. And he was humbled by it. The infinite realizing, the infinitesimal realizing its infinitesimal nature, and tasting the infinite. What can be more humble than that? The infinitesimal, realizing its infinitesimal nature, and experiencing a drop of the infinite, and reflecting its consciousness upon itself. What can be more humble than that? And what can invoke more love in one's heart than that? So that was Rupa Goswami. So because he won't speak up, because every time he speaks up, that semblance of control, that semblance of self-absorption, even though it's not even real anymore, brings up those feelings of my infinitesimal nature and God's glory and my relationship with that. So, Sarup Damodar begins to explain his verse. And he says, his verses are a mind of Siddhanta. A mind of philosophical conclusions. And that's the beauty of the poetry of Rupa Goswami. They're describing God, but they're also describing the conclusions about God. And then Sarup Damodar repeats these two incredible verses that we discussed them before. One of the verses was Rupa Goswami's realization of the mood of it must be Radharani at Kurukshetra, which is the heart of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to taste. That sense of Jivalambha or separation. Interesting. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it says that Dainya is only experienced in Vrindavan. Utter humility. The total sense of worthlessness in love. And what is that? It's the intimate relationship with God that allows one to experience in full the loving heart of God. Separation from which creates the greatest sense of uselessness, worthlessness. God is my life. Without God, I have no life. And the greater your realization of God, the greater your realization of that without in my life, without God, the greater your realization that God is my life, without Him, I have no life. So the residents of Vrindavan are extremely in a feeling a worthless position because of how much they value the association of Krishna and that relationship with Krishna. But simultaneously, that Vipralamba, which is connected to Dainya, that mood of separation, which is connected to Dainya, humility, is the highest ecstasy because it is the most love. So Rupa Goswami was expressing those feelings and expressing, again, those two verses, the one about Kurukshetra, and then again, it's so significant that Krishnas Kaviraj is quoting it again, maybe 2-3 times, that verse, Tande Tada Vani Vritim Vitadate Tada Pali Lapdeye Karna Krodha Tandam Vani Vatayate Do not know how much nectar, can't imagine how much nectar is in those two syllables. Krishna. Krishna. When it enters into my heart, I pray, when it enters on my tongue, I pray for many, many tongues. We know that verse. So, this Tunde Pandab and Evidim is one of the introductory verses to the bottom of it. So Ramananda Roy, who's also an incredibly qualified, intimate associate and poet, then he begins to ask, how in this drama, Rupa Goswami used the various literary devices from Natya Shastra to express his sentiments, beginning with the Nandi Sloka. The Nandi Sloka is the introductory sloka. I believe it generally links the drama to a particular time or something like that. And that's what we're going to begin to discuss. And to me, it's probably the most exciting part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita because we will go over verses that are the most beautiful expressions of poetry, and we'll understand a little bit about how the poetry is used, and we'll be humbled, but we'll marvel at the expressions of Srila Rupa Goswami. Okay. Are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hare Krishna, Gail.
Yeah,
I just wanted to tell you that before we speak, very nice to see you up there in Richmond. But I just realized, you know, you wanted to surprise me. And when I drove my car around, I didn't know where I was going, and there were three entrances to 4101, right? And my car led me to the middle entrance, which I thought was the only one. So it wasn't Krishna's plan. But anyway, what's your question?
My question is about Rupa Goswami's shyness when asked to speak and to sit with Krishna, Lord Chaitanya and his friends. And I just wanted you to distinguish that shyness from the shyness that we experience among, you know, conditioned souls here. And the reason why I want you to distinguish that is because you have explained that that humility can be reconciled with self-confidence. So his shyness doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that self-confidence was lacking or, you know, a sense of inferiority with respect to others is there, you know, because you can be self-confident and humble, you know, because you recognize that your qualities are not coming from you, they're coming from Krishna. And so what was the nature of Rupa Goswami's shyness and not wanting to sit with Lord Chaitanya and his friends?
Well, there are different spiritual psychologies. Not everybody has the same type of mind. But the general feeling is whether you become overwhelmed, and it even overwhelms any sense of ability you have, or you're able to see your ability as coming. Either way, you're not taking credit for that ability. The self-confidence is that I can do this. I can write poetry. I can manage. I can do this. I can do that. But you don't. It's not a hunkar, because those powers are God's. They're not yours inherently, and it's dependent on His mercy that you have them. So that sense is there. Now, I mean, your question may be, well, why didn't he just stand up and speak, not, you know, knowing that they weren't his qualities or something like that?
Yeah.
Because you're not in an intellectual frame of mind in terms of bhakti. It's just like someone like Prabhupada, right? Just someone like Prabhupada. He was Sainapati Prabhupada. He was the general guru. And he fought in that way. You know, so when I look at it is, you do have an intellectual understanding and you have a feeling from the heart. And you can look at the world in either way, according to your personality, according to your mood. So sometimes Prabhupada was very, very bold. He acted very, very bold, confident. But when he was questioned, you know, you are more than a Paramahamsa, he said, no, I'm less than you. Because that's the way he felt.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you can go right from the way you feel. I'm going through a tunnel. I hope I don't lose reception in the tunnel.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, okay. So it's just like a Paramahamsa. He's seeing, it's saying that he's seeing everyone is serving Krishna better than himself. So how can that one be a devotee, a guru? He comes down to the Mudjim platform for service. So Rupa is in the Paramahamsa's mood. He's not taking the platform of Mudjim at that point, making distinctions. It's a complete, overwhelming experience of your soul, and that becomes prominent in the consciousness. And you're happy in that love. But to service, you may do something. If you're the acharya of a spiritual movement, you may have to take that position. And you may have to be very, very aware of the abilities and qualities that God has given you. But it's not like that's your main focus. That's just for service. So it depends on what your service is. Whether you will be in a Uttam consciousness, or you'll come down to Mudjim and make those distinctions. But a preacher generally has to come down to Mudjim. He has to make distinctions. So Prabhupada could chastise his disciples for their faults. And I don't think he would think intellectually that they were as learned as him, or maybe even as advanced. But when it came down to the feeling of his heart, he would feel that way. I gave the example of a glass of water. When the glass of water is dirty, then you don't see anything that's added to it. When a glass of water is clean, every spark of dust becomes very, very apparent. So I would just say in that it's just the reconciliation of that is that you may, according to the circumstances, situation, your personality, make distinctions or not. You may stay completely in terms of your feelings, which Rupa Goswami did at those circumstances, and therefore he just felt I am nothing, I won't speak anything. I mean, I've seen very, very, very humble Vaishnavas. I remember when this Dr. Fakir Mohan, we asked him to give Bhagavatam class. We asked him to give Bhagavatam class in Dobranath. First he bowed down. And he held the hands of every sannyasi in love and said, bless me, I know nothing. Bless me, I know nothing. But then, you know, after the class, his servant makes a mistake and blasts him. So it depends, you know, what the situation you're in. Whether or not you come deeply into the heart or you have to look for your intelligence. But either way, in the heart, one is not, or even in the intelligence ultimately, one is not. It's just a question if those feelings become so overwhelming that you don't even want to recognize your abilities. Or the sense of moving to the center, it just overwhelms you so much. And there are different spiritual psychologies described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There's different types of people. Some people don't get overwhelmed. They're pure devotees. But due to their nature of their mind, they don't get overwhelmed by emotions. Their consciousness is considered an ocean. and their emotions are considered a volcano. So it's the volcano in the ocean concept. The emotions are there, but it never overwhelms them. And another person is considered the pebble in the pond consciousness. Any little thing will invoke within them very, very overwhelming emotions. That's my answer.
Yes, that was great, Maharaj. But this last statement you made, it made me feel that the person who never gets overwhelmed by his emotions, stays on like the intellectual level, that person, although his devotion is pure, it seems like he's more at a disadvantage compared to the one who does get overcome by emotions. Because he doesn't seem like that person.
No, it's not that the emotions are not there. One just has a different type of mind where they don't overwhelm one externally.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean the emotions are not there.
Okay.
And those are describing spiritual psychology.
Mm-hmm.
But on the material platform, yeah, I mean, you know, I always describe, you know, my nature, I don't have simple faith. So is that good or bad? I don't know. It forces me to understand things really deeply. And perhaps that leads to even stronger faith? I don't know. And it's nice, you know, people who are very emotive, it could be very, very good for bhakti. It could also lead one away from bhakti. Whatever the thing is, we're all given a particular karma. The main thing is to dedicate ourselves to Krishna and make our life about Krishna's pleasure. Regardless of what our condition is, we just try to give everything to Krishna. And we try to dedicate our lives to Guru. With whatever we have, whether we're people who look first from the head, whether we're people who look first from the gut, whether we're people who look first from the heart. Bhakti is not just the mind either. It's an emotion of the soul. Like, you know, I was with Nanda Dulal and Savitri, so they saw my Giriraj Giri, and they saw that Jayadvaita Swami now has deities, and he's very attached to his deities. They were Gopi Pranadanas, Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Shilas. You know, Jayadvaita Maharaj is not, you know, by nature, perhaps, look at a person that's overwhelmed by his sentiments. Although sometimes he gets upset when people do not act properly. But you can see just by being strict and following the Prabhupada's orders that natural sentiments do arise, and that's so wonderful. So the main thing is that whatever we are, whatever we have, we just give. And the reciprocation will soften our hearts. Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, you should spend the rest of the day absorbed in Gaur and Radha Krishna Katha with Savitri.
And that's the plan.
Rare opportunity of getting her association there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Wow. Hey. Great. Carl and Carla. Wonderful.
Greetings from Carpinteria.
Oh, wow. That's even more wonderful. actually, just before the class here, I was listening to a lecture I gave in Vrindavan, and a disciple of Sri Krishnamurti walked in, and I started telling them about you and Stella. So I was just thinking of you before. Wow, Carpentry, how long will you be there?
For another few weeks.
How fortunate. How fortunate. Wonderful place. Offer my deepest respects to Giriraj Swami. Thank you.
And Virajan Prabhu is here also.
How can it get better than that? Offer my respects to him also. I forgot he was still there. How wonderful.
Hi, Krishna.
Wonderful. That is a beautiful place, Giriraj Swami's ashram, near Santa Barbara. Like a paradisial, spiritual place. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna from Maine.
Is that Henry, I heard?
Yes, I'm in Maine.
Oh, okay. Henry, I may try to call you up after the class. I wanted to ask you something to get through.
I'll keep my cell phone on, Maharaj.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Maharaj?
Someone else? Who's that?
Maharaj? It's Mahamuni.
That Mooney? Mooney, all right, go.
Yes. Maharaj, I keep having these visions of you driving off a cliff as you explain the finer points of Rasa Tattva. I'm glad.
Wow.
I'm glad.
It's possible, but and probably not only that, but with all the bots. You know the story when I first came to how I came to Krishna consciousness. I was in my last semester of getting a master's, and I was upstate, and I was driving from school, and I was doing kirtan, and then it started to snow, and my car started to spin around, and it's true, as it was spinning around, I was doing kirtan. Anyway, it's a long story. And I remember when the car finally crashed and it turned over to its side, I went, Jai Om Vishnu Bhad Paramahamsa. But that's another story.
Well, I'm glad we didn't have to relive that.
Mooney, give me a definition of agency.
In the most influential tradition in India, the Vyakarana school, they're the grammar school, and everybody basically follows them in this. They define an agent as someone who has the capacity to independently initiate action. But when they start to define independence, and this is where a lot of like Vedanta thinkers explain, independent doesn't mean entirely independent. It just means that you have some degree of independence. That is to say, you're not just entirely passive. And so, yeah. So basically, the capacity to initiate action with some degree of independence.
And what's the title of the book?
It's probably going to be called something like Free Will, Agency, and Selfhood in Indian Philosophy, I think.
And what are some of the articles?
Well, the idea is that basically we take all of the main schools, and for each one, a relevant scholar gives an analysis of, you know, it's not like every paper has the same exact view, but what we're trying to examine is the way in which different schools' understanding of the nature of freedom and how that relates to selfhood. And I don't know, to my mind, an interesting sub-theme of the book is just the nature of personhood, where, you know, some schools, like the yoga and Sankhya traditions, ultimately they're very anti-personal, even if they believe in selves. But the Nyaya school and a lot of the, like the Vaishnava Vedantins, they argue ultimately that personhood is a fundamental feature of reality. And that's tied into the notion of agency, because to be a person on some level means you have to have some agency, part of the cluster of features we identify with personhood. Anyway, I'm just thinking aloud now, Maharaj. I don't know if this is helping.
No, it's interesting. I mean, it's a fact, you know, on my topic of humility, it's one of the key realizations of humility, right? That your ability to initiate change, right, is extremely limited. And
yeah.
God's ability to initiate change is unlimited, you know?
Yeah.
And when you realize that, you know, then there's, you know, a sense of who you are that inspires a relationship with God. Anyway, it's that point we discussed extensively about dependency.
Yeah.
You know, it's, in other words, the era of material consciousness is that independent sense of doership, right? To the extreme degree that we are independent. You know, we can initiate whatever change we want. Okay.
Yeah, and it seems
okay,
more as that, okay.
Go ahead.
Please.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, it's like the other side of that is kind of like the Advaitavada, the Mayavadis, who say, ultimately, we really don't do anything, and we have no capacity. And so I've always been a fan of Sri Ramanuja's way of seeing it, that, you know, the key to acting properly in the world is to perform our dharmas and engage in our various roles and responsibilities, but with a deeply, deeply internalized sense of our dependence on God. And if we can do that, that's basically what he explains karma yoga as. You know, and so like ordinary, like non-karma yoga, the way, you know, we act when we're not really particularly spiritually minded, we do all these different things, but we really have a limited understanding of what's going on. So we basically see things in terms of our own control. But karma yoga is that you do the same things, right? You enact your various responsibilities and relationships, but you do it where you kind of have a much more expansive notion of all of the factors that go into it. And ultimately, you act in a sense of deep appreciation of how dependent you are on God. And that appreciation naturally leads to gratitude, because you appreciate that all these things that I value and my ability to engage in this way flows from a kind of gift of God. And so he has a much more positive understanding of how, you know, that's why his idea of karma yoga is so, I think, valuable for people like us, that, you know, it's not a kind of hatred of the world like Mayavad, but nor is it a kind of materialistic way of seeing yourself in the center. So anyway, yeah. What I'm getting at, I guess, is that this idea of recognizing how we do have some agency, but it's very deeply dependent, is, in my mind, a kind of crucial thing to to live in the right way. I'm just kind of riffing on what you said.
No, it's a wonderful concept. Beautiful. Really well said.
Well, thanks, Maharaj.
Okay.
Thanks for doing this. Your dedication to the class at great personal risk
okay.
is admirable.
I was really careful. When I somehow found myself on that desolate road just about to go off the cliff, I immediately pressed on the brakes. Completely aware. Okay,
good news. Sorry, Marsh. Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Nanda Dula, what a wonderful stay at your place.
It was your mercy, Maharaj, you know. But you know, I can echo Mahamuni that, you know, with great wish, you know, you are doing this incredible, you know, lecture today. So I think, you know, you should concentrate on driving now.
No, I'm fully concentrated on diving. And it's great because, you know, I'm only now 2 hours from my destination. You know? I'm only two hours and 15 minutes to my destination. So it's going quite well. No traffic. Okay, thank you. All right, well.
Thank you, Mark.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Bill Maharaj. Chaitanya Priya.
Hare Krishna. Hi.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. You can write me a little follow-up on our last discussion.
Yes, I started listening to those lectures regularly.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, thank you all. I appreciate it.